thank you for the invitation and the co-sponsors of the event, the UCLA History Department and the Center for Near Eastern Studies. I'm slightly apprehensive about this presentation. I've been giving it, you know, a number of occasions. I'm apprehensive because I'm in an academic milieu. It's not an academic presentation. But, you know, it is a five-year plan, so I'll try to make it as least boring as possible. Anyway, so let me start a little bit about the background of how this came about. I started this position almost exactly a year ago, February 1st of last year. And one of the first tasks that I was given by our board member was to develop some sort of a plan of where we are going to go in the next few years. And this is in line with what foundations are doing. Trying to have a strategic plan, having a programming plan. And so instead of doing this sitting in Lisbon and writing it, you know, even though you know, I do have the academic background to know a little bit about the Armenian diaspora, I thought I should get out and talk to as many people as possible, community leaders, intellectuals. So I met over 200 people from the two Catholic eye to school teachers in eight different countries where the foundation, my department, is active. The only large sector that I left out because of distance, I couldn't go there last year, is the Latin American communities. So I have promised them that I will do that as well this year. So at the end, the outcome, I wrote it over the summer. The board approved it in September as it was, and then it took us 2 months, 3 months to get it all translated into, we thought it should be available in four languages for practical and symbolic reasons. So it's out in English, French, Armenian, and Portuguese. And the printed form looks like this. You know, it's about 25 pages, but all four languages together, it's like this. It's online, exactly the same text in the four languages. Now, let me start with the mission and the priorities of my department. The mission is fairly large, it's fairly ambitious as well. It's to create a viable future for the Armenian people in which its culture and language are preserved and valued. So, yes, it's fairly large, but it also makes it clear that we're engaged in culture and language. Those are the domains in which the foundation has been strong and we will continue to work. And then the four pillars on which we're going to construct our programs are these four priority areas. The first one, by far the largest, is to promote the preservation of the Armenian language and culture and the development of the diaspora by linking its different parts and by investing in education. And so I will explain each of these categories in slightly greater detail. The second one is to develop a viable Armenia through investing in its youth and their commitment to civil society. The third one is something that's relatively new for us, and that's to work on Armenian-Turkish relations, to improve Armenian-Turkish relations by sponsoring projects that encourage a common understanding of their long shared history. And the fourth one is a more classical area in which we have been active and will continue to be, is to preserve and make available the Armenian literary heritage. So what do each of these mean? Now, before that, let me also go over three overall points, sort of philosophical points or foundational points that are at the root of the plan. We need to be, as a department, representative and balanced. We have the unique privilege to be outside and above all community politics, all community divisions, so we need to be balanced in that respect. And we need to be representative of the entire, not the entire, that sounds very grand, but we need to be representative of the Armenian people globally as much as we can. But this doesn't mean distributing the funds equally between priorities or equally between organizations and whatnot, which leads to the second point, is that we need to be strategic, proactive, and we are going to give larger sums to fewer initiatives. The philosophy in our funding to date has been, let's keep as many people as possible happy by giving them a small amounts of money. So $2,000, $6,000, you know, $8,000. And that doesn't really get you know, it buys friends, so to speak, but it doesn't really have much of an impact. And we're getting out of that, and we're saying we're going to develop a program with partners, and we're going to put significant for us amounts of money to achieve this. And the final point is that we have to reflect the current realities of the Armenian world, and we're putting the emphasis on Western or established diaspora. We are quite aware that there is a significant diaspora in Russia, Ukraine, the post-Soviet diaspora, but at this stage, the only thing we can do is commission a study in order to understand what the dynamics there are, but we can't really work there, and our resources do not allow that. So, now, the first priority area. As you can see, it's a fairly basic PowerPoint presentation, but I try to spice it up by putting some photos here and there. This is the Gulbenkian School in Anjar. Here in the first priority area, which is, as I said, by far the largest portion of our funding, we're going to spend roughly $2 million in this area. And here, what emerged in my consultations and discussions is that Western Armenian is at the verge of disappearing as a living language. And this generation is the last generation that could possibly do something about that. Now, there are two schools of thought out there. One is, okay, the language is disappearing, let's move on, you know, forget about it. Or to say, it might be disappearing, but damn it, I'm going to try to do something about it. And we agreed that we're going to be in that second school and say, we're going to try to do something about this. And so, what is it that you can do? What is it that you can do to preserve and advance and promote the language? The first point is we will continue giving assistance to Armenian schools. Most of our funding goes to Middle Eastern schools. That will certainly continue. But here again, we're going to be working with certain key schools in the Middle East and Europe and North America, where we can develop innovative programs of how to teach Armenian to school children and, you know, to adults as well. The second point that emerged, that wherever I went, people said, we don't have enough good qualified Armenian language and culture and history teachers. Not at the university level, but at the school level. And we're going to develop a program here, a global program that where we would prepare and we would encourage the preparation of Armenian language teachers. The third point is the more traditional, you know, university-based language teaching. There are certain universities where we have given some modest amounts of resources to enable them to do this. And the final point here, which is a crucial point, is the use of new technologies in the teaching of language and culture. One of the things that I realized in my travels and discussions is that such a wide schism has developed between Armenian history and language and identity and new technologies for the young generation, where, you know, as Dr. Gulujan's work also shows, where anything that's related to grandparents, mothers, fathers, and family, and anything that's related to the past is in Armenian. Anything that's related to their current reality and the future is in English, French, Spanish, whatever the language might be. This will continue, no doubt about that. Let's not be naive. But nevertheless, I think there are ways that we can use technology where we can increase the digital footprint of Armenian language in the technological world by developing applications, by developing ebooks, etc., etc. And we're going to put a lot of resources, or, you know, relatively speaking, into that. So in all of the above that I mentioned, we will spend about $1 million, about half of it going to schools. And the other $1 million here is going to go to university scholarships. And this, I'm sure, will interest in this environment here at the university. Again, the university scholarships, we decided to get out of giving small amounts of money to a bunch of students to having specific categories to which students can apply. And no longer needs-based, because we really have difficulty determining social need or financial need, we're going to go entirely to merit-based scholarships. And so the first category is the Carlos Gulbenkian Global Excellence Scholarship for Armenian Students. We will give four of these scholarships annually, 3 to 4 years renewable at the PhD level, where the subject doesn't really matter all that much. We will emphasize and prioritize social sciences, but the subject is not the determining factor. The determining factor is excellence, academic excellence, and of course, the ethnic cultural heritage background of the student. It's for Armenian students. I'm sure one of you will ask a question, how do you determine who is an Armenian or not? I don't have an answer to that, but you know, it's for nourishing and encouraging Armenian scholarly leadership, research leadership in the world. So that's the first category. When I say full scholarships, it means giving four scholarships that in the American context would amount to about $50,000. So full fees and living expenses. In the European context, it would be less because fees are not as expensive in Europe. We haven't determined, we don't have a list of X number of universities. We say internationally recognized universities. We don't feel like we should be discriminating against the best Brazilian university for the best Brazilian student, for example. So that's something that is, you know, careful. We're careful of saying it's not just five universities, but internationally. The second category, again, something that will interest people here is the Gulbenkian Armenian Studies Scholarships. Again, the first one excludes Armenian Studies. This is where we would give 4 to 6, again, fully funded scholarships for master's and PhD level, in rare cases, undergraduate. Again, fully funded. Here we also include postdocs. So anyone who's studying Armenian Studies, broadly defined, we don't define Armenian Studies as very, you know, the narrow chairs of Armenian Studies, but broadly defined Armenian Studies. And here again, we say that we are going to put emphasis on contemporary issues, modern and contemporary issues, 20th and 21st century. It is a bit of a break. We're not saying history is not important, and we're not saying we will not fund history subjects, but we are saying that so far Armenian scholarship has been predominantly, Armenian studies scholarship has been predominantly history and linguistics driven, and we have excluded in our top level analysis, we have excluded contemporary problems and issues. And so we are going to look at more favorably if we have applications from students who are studying current issues. So that's the second category. The third category is a specific scholarship to prepare Western Armenian teachers. So Armenian teacher education scholarships. And here we will give 6, 7, depending who they are, and not who they are, depending what is the need. And it could be either teachers who need to perfect their Armenian language skills, or those who are fluent in Armenian but want to become teachers, and we will give them scholarships to go to teachers college, et cetera, et cetera. So again, we don't expect things to be, you know, in the $50,000 range here, but nevertheless, comfortable scholarships to 4 to 6 students per year. All of these, as I said, are renewable. The fourth category is scholarships only for Armenians in Armenia. And that is something that we are expanding from our partnership with Yerevan State University currently. And we will be giving short-term grants for Armenian scholars, graduate students and young scholars to go to international conferences in their subject. So again, the subject matter does not matter. The idea is to expose Armenian graduate students and young scholars in Armenia to scholarship abroad. And these are short-term grants, you know, $1,500 or $2,000 to enable them to go to whatever conference or short-term exchange program to go. By definition, short-term means less than 3 months. The fifth category is the undergraduate studies scholarships. And here there is an element of social justice collectively, insofar as we are going to almost exclusively focus on students in developing countries. So that would be, you know, Lebanon, for example, Latin America, depending how you how you define development. So again, not great amount of money, but to enable students, undergraduates, to be able to go to college, to go to university. We expect to give about 40 of these, as I said, mostly in developing countries. Some of our friends and colleagues in Europe and the United States said this is not fair, this is not just, and to which our response is that here in Europe and North America and developing countries, there are many avenues through which students can get money to go to university, be it loans or grants or whatever, but mostly loans. Whereas in developing countries, the state doesn't have those means in order to provide, so we will do that. The sixth one is not really a category. We just put it there. We sometimes find the odd Armenian who somehow has ended up in Portugal, one or two, whatever. We feel that we shouldn't leave them out in the cold, so there will be a bit of money for them. But as I said, it's not a program. We don't encourage Armenians to come to Portugal to study. It's just ad hoc. And the seventh one, again, it's not a program insofar as we will actively seek it out, but nevertheless, we find ourselves in emergency. Students find themselves in front of emergency situations. It doesn't mean that they've run out of beer money or pizza money. Students in Syria, for example, this past year in 2013, we gave hundreds of thousands of dollars in humanitarian relief to Syria, including encouraging Syrian Armenian students to go to university in Armenia, those who found themselves in Armenia. I can explain that further if there is interest. So we roughly from 2013 budget we spent or earmarked roughly 600,000 euros to Syrian crisis humanitarian or student support. So the second priority area, on Armenia. Again, here we are asked sometimes, why are you giving money or supporting initiatives in Armenia? There is a state, there are billionaires there and whatnot. And again, we feel it's not a major part of our funding, but we feel that we need to be a representative globally of Armenia, of Armenians. And the Republic is obviously a central or a very important point in the Armenian world. So here, however, our focus is on things that other diaspora organizations do not necessarily do. And that is on youth and civil society, civic education programs. So we've been working with certain civil society groups there, including the environmental movement, in order to encourage them. So that's a civil society component. About half of our funding for Armenia will go there. The other half will be going to exchange programs and study tours for young academics. In addition to the scholarship program for Armenians in Armenia I talked about, we will also institute some sort of a summer school in Armenia on methodologies, the innovative methodologies in doing history, social science, whatever. So that's something that is on the horizon. And finally, we feel that we have to also work a little bit with state institutions. In this case, it would be the Ministry of the Diaspora. In the envelope for Armenia, we can also include initiatives from Artsakh, Nagorno-Karabakh, if need be. The third element, those of you who don't know, that's the Akhuryan River between Ani and Armenia, and the old Silk Road Bridge. The third area is Armenian-Turkish relations. There are projects that encourage common understanding of their long shared history. As a foundation, when we look ahead for the next 10 years, where the Armenian world is going, it is obvious that Armenian-Turkish relations is going to be a central part of the reality of the Armenian world. So we feel that we should be putting a little bit of resources into here to encourage this kind of dialogue initiatives. We will continue supporting schools, as we do in Istanbul, in Bolis, Armenian schools. support some initiatives of Ottoman studies and translations from Kurdish, Turkish, Turkish into Armenian, and vice versa. We have to be very careful not to engage in politics because we're not a political organization. By our own laws, we cannot work in politics. But this is not really about politics. This is about, you know, education, civil society, and whatnot. But we also have to have a good political nose not to be naive about this, because a lot of people are jumping into it without really understanding the dynamics and whatnot. So we have to be very careful, on one hand very respectful, on the other hand very firm on how we approach the subject. And thankfully we have some very good partners and individuals in Turkey who are pushing the envelope there. The fourth priority area is the Armenian, you know, preserving and making available the Armenian literary heritage. Some of the language, I should say, preserving, maintaining, it's a bit conservative. I always make a point of saying it's not just preserving, it's also developing. Culture is developed by every generation, and I explained that in our five-year plan. And here we are slowly shifting away from paper to electronic publications, digitizations, ebooks, and whatnot. We are encouraging Armenian publications to be in the electronic form, encouraging newspapers that don't have websites to have websites, digitizing research material when we have the people who are willing to make their archives or publications available to us. So that's something that we will continue doing, and we envision that by 2020 most of our funding for publications will go to electronic means. Again, we will focus on modern subjects and contemporary issues and the culture being produced by the young. Translations is emerging an important element. A lot of people say it's very useful to have translation into Armenian and out of Armenian. Instead of reacting to people who want to translate this good book or that good book into whatever language, we're going to be much more proactive. And sometime this year, I'm going to put together a committee of, you know, experts and their task will be, tell me the 20 most important books or texts that need to be translated into Armenian, Western or Eastern, let's say, you know, from the classics in the social sciences to literature and whatnot. And then we can embark on the process of in 2, 3, 4 years' time, we can systematically translate and publish this text. And the final thing that we thought of doing is, I don't know if I can set it up this year, but certainly next year I'm hoping to set up an international prize to write in Western Armenian. And this, I know there is a similar prize with the Tololian Prize, and I will be talking to them as well. So we don't want to duplicate things. Maybe there should be just one prize, or, you know, we'll coordinate it. But, you know, the idea is to give a significant amount of money to encourage people to write. So $10,000, for example, if you get first prize in fiction or nonfiction. So those are that category. Now, some other initiatives that are not part of the four core priority areas and do not necessarily cost a lot of money. The first one is, you know, harking back to something I mentioned earlier, that we have a unique capacity to attract and work with all segments of the community practically. And so this gives us the possibility of turning the department into a hub of connections and strategic thinking. And I'm already seeing this as I go to France and someone says, I have this idea to do it. And I come here and someone has exactly the same idea to do it a bit differently. To make those connections, that's the web part, the connection part. But also to bring people to Lisbon once a year, to put them in a room like this, at the foundation, and say, all right, where are we going in this area, in this specific area, where are we going? Let's think of strategic direction. The first one that we want to do this year, it's going to be something broader, sort of the kickoff thing. And it will be called Armenians at 2115, not 2015, at 2115. Because April 25 2015 we wake up, what are we going to do next? We don't have an answer to that. And I think we should encourage that conversation. And then subsequently, the two other topics will be the reform of the diaspora and education system, the Armenian education or Armenian language or culture instruction in diaspora, and how to reform that. So inviting key experts in that field. No media, no, there is no Armenian diaspora in Lisbon. That's a huge plus in this domain. So there's 25 Armenians in all of Lisbon. And so, you know, there is no grandstanding, but opportunity to talk about these issues. So the one will be on Armenian teaching and school reform, and the second one will be on the use of IT in culture, where we would put together writers, IT folks, and educators together. So that's the first point. The second point is comes from a conversation I had the second week I was in Lisbon, when one of my Portuguese colleagues came and said to me, he said, we know Carlos Gulbenkian was Armenian. We have no idea what it means to be Armenian. And I said, really? I mean, there hasn't been any cultural events? And he said, no. So in October of this year, there will be a week of Armenian cultural events in Lisbon. The Gulbenkian Orchestra will play Armenian music. There will be exhibition, art exhibition, an Arshil Gorky exhibition, an exhibition of Gulbenkian's personal papers, a conference, an academic conference, a series of other lectures. So it will be our effort to tell the foundation and the Portuguese, these are the Armenian people. And I'm happy to say that the conference is on something that this university knows a little bit about trade networks, Armenian and Portuguese trade networks. The third point is we will have a bit of money for unforeseen circumstances, urgent action, you know, crisis happens. The penultimate point is the importance of strategic partnerships. I can't emphasize enough that, in reality, we're not doing any of this. We're funding this. We're providing ideas. We're providing a strategic direction. We need partners to do the work for us. We're a funding organization. My department has 5 people. Soon we're going to be 7. And so we will be able to follow and all that, but we're not the experts in this domain. So the partnerships are important. And the final point here is that we need to incorporate, as all foundations, a culture of evaluation. So a culture of planning, evaluation, strategic thinking. The plan itself will be evaluated midway through to see whether or not we're going in the right direction or what we need to adjust. Some challenges that I expect. It's always good to have good ideas. Implementing them is always very difficult. So this year is a crucial year. So to actually put these ideas in practice, we won't be able to do everything, but we'll try to do as many things as we can. A very particular challenge is explaining to Armenian organizations what it means to be results-based, what it means evaluation, what it means you have to write a report to show what you use the money for. Unfortunately, the approach is give us the check, don't ask questions, we know what we're doing. See, it doesn't work like that anymore. It doesn't mean I don't trust you, but it doesn't work like that. I need to show results. You need to show it to me so I can show it to the board. Another particular challenge is the reform of the diaspora school system, particularly in Lebanon. And we have commissioned a study on this. In 2 weeks, I'll go to Beirut to present that study. Working collaboratively, not to duplicate efforts. You know, we have a tradition of two of everything, if not more. To try to get out of that, I don't believe in centralization. I never advocate for centralization, but we need to be able to collaborate and coordinate things. There is a slew of risk associated with Armenian-Turkish dialogue. I mean, Turkey is opening up, and there are things that could be discussed that couldn't be discussed 5 years ago, put you in prison 5 years ago. But that space could close again, we don't know, so it's a bit of a risk there. And then in Armenia, risk there maintaining the right balance between working with government, civil society, and academia. They don't necessarily get along all that well, especially civil society and government. Now, in conclusion, our annual budget is $3.5 million that we spend on programs that exclude salaries, electricity bill, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't seem it's that much money. But if you accumulate it over, you know, the last 13 years, that's $55 million American dollars that we have spent on scholarships and grants. You know, imagine what we can do with this kind of money if we are strategic and results focused. So I'll end there. I'm more than happy to take any questions from you. So thank you very much.